What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
A lot of conjecture going on right now as to what is going to be happening at the Federal Reserve's annual Jackson Hole Economic Symposium that's taken place this week from August the 21st through the 23rd. This year's theme is labor markets in transition, demographics, productivity, and macroeconomic policy. Guy Williams has been watching this very, very closely, and he joins us as he does every Monday at this time. He's the president of Gulf Coast Bank of Trust. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Guy, there's always a lot of articles leading up to this Jackson Hole Economic Symposium, but it seems like they're off the rails this time. I mean, I was looking at it over the weekend, and I mean, it's just coming from every direction.
Yeah, this is a great time to own real estate in Jackson Hole, have an Airbnb or a restaurant, because lots of people are going, lots of interest, and a lot of uncertainty, because no one really knows what's up. You know, Chairman Powell has been under pretty relentless attack, but he's essentially a free agent at this point. He knows his term is up in April, so he's free to do whatever he wants. He's already said he's not leaving early. So I think he and the group are going to sit down and have some serious talks, and we really don't know what's going to happen right now because of the different things that are pushing the Fed in different directions.
And this comes on the heel of some fragmentation amongst his board of governors, which is really unusual, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's important to note that this is a majority wins. The Fed chairman loves to have everybody vote with him. But even if two or three or even four vote no, he still may get his way. But the challenge is no one knows what the chairman wants, and no one also knows what the other board members are looking at. One of the things that's happening right now is probably a week ago, there was a 97% probability that rates would be cut. That's dropped down to 84%. And essentially, no one's predicting a 50 basis point cut. This is a 84% chance of a 25 basis point cut. But the challenge is, we had a big bump in producer prices. And so the markets are looking at this and saying, well, you know, maybe inflation isn't tamed as well as we thought. And just for the listeners, you know, consumer prices, that's what we pay when we go to the store. When you go to the grocery store, the gas station, whatever you and I pay for things, that's a consumer price. But everything we buy has to be either made or grown. And so the producer prices are what the makers of the food, the growers of the food, the makers of the appliances, anyone who produces something is affected by producer prices. And those went up 3.3%. So that makes everybody think, well, maybe we do have some inflation pressure, and maybe we should wait a little longer. And that's always been the status. You know, with this Fed was famous for that phrase transitory, which turned out not to be true on inflation. But now they're pretty much famous for let's wait for a little more data. So some of the Fed governors are saying, look, let's wait a little more. Let's see what happens, because we're getting some conflicting information from different directions.
Let me ask the question this way. Producer prices go up 3.3%. Is it true or not that when oil and gas prices would go up, you would see these producer prices going up, but oil and gas prices have been going down, and this is moving in the opposite direction? Anomaly or not?
It is, and that question, anomaly or not, is tough to answer, because oil and gas affect everything. because essentially everything has to be shipped. If you grow an avocado and then get it to New Orleans so that we can make guacamole, it has to come by truck. So oil and gas is going to affect food. It's going to affect energy. It's going to affect utility prices. And so when oil prices go up, it causes an increase in everything. When oil prices go down, it causes a decrease in everything. Now, there's a little bit of a lag because, you know, people have some inventory of oil and gas, but it's not the only component of inflation, and that's why the Fed likes to use core, which excludes energy. And so we're seeing oil and gas go down, probably not going to go down much more, but that is very helpful, and it does help hold down inflation. And it is a good reminder. You know, years ago we used to talk about America being energy independent. We've achieved that. We are energy independent. We don't rely on the Middle East for our energy anymore. So that gives us a lot of flexibility in global policy making.
And I have to imagine that that kind of is contributing to the angst of the Fed, right? Because you wouldn't usually see this moving in opposite directions.
Yeah, and the Fed's problem is, and I don't say problem, but the Fed's challenge is they are absolutely convinced to the core of their being that tariffs are inflationary. And at the beginning of the year, if someone had said the baseline tariff would be 15, we would have said that's a bit high, but, you know, maybe 10. But it now looks like 15 is sort of the target base. Well, some of that is going to be passed on to consumers. Maybe not all of it, but some will be. There'll also be some substitution. As prices go up, you'll buy less. But some of the things that are tariffed, you know, really do affect consumers and push inflation. A simple example is beef. You know, people like Taco Bell import a lot of beef from Brazil. Well, when Brazil has a 50% tariff, suddenly Taco Bell is looking around saying, well, where can I get extra beef from other places? And in the meantime, look, the price of a taco and a burrito is going to have to go up because beef prices are up. So we're seeing the Fed wrestling with how much inflation will we get as a result of tariffs. And, of course, there's uncertainty because we don't know what the final level will be. So that's one of the reasons that they're really anxious and waiting, because they're fundamentally convinced that tariffs will cause inflation. They're probably right on that, but they haven't seen it much, and so they want to wait and see, you know, where do the tariffs end up, and then how much inflation is caused by it. Some of the tariffs will be absorbed by sellers, so it won't all pass through, but certainly some will.
Got a text here that says tariffs are not inflationary, but that doesn't mean they don't increase prices. That's the whole point of a tariff in the first place.
Well, and, you know, if you increase prices, that is inflationary. Now, I think the texter may make the point that
one's a precursor to the other, right?
Yeah, if prices go up, that's what the consumer price index is. It measures prices. Now, they may be implying that, look, if using the Brazil beef example, if Taco Bell raises the price of a beef burrito, you'll get a chicken burrito instead. And there is a substitution effect. But there's some things that you really have a challenge substituting. One that matters in New Orleans is coffee. You know, We don't make coffee in America. We grow just a tiny bit of coffee. So as coffee prices go up, it's hard to substitute away. I don't see us drinking tea, and there are tariffs on tea, and we don't grow much tea in America either. So if you want a hot beverage, that price will go up, and that does tend to be inflationary.
It seems to me that the public sentiment on this is changing a little bit. Recently, Amazon has decided to actually advertise the pre-tariff price to the post-tariff price of many of their items. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it yet. I've heard about it, and I think it's more of a political move trying to, you know, get the government off of the concept of tariffs. Now, Amazon is one of the very big importers of foreign goods, so certainly it's their incentive to keep tariffs low. So I think that's a political statement, it's not really information that matters much. If you're buying something, the price is the price. You know, we look at things like hotel rooms, and you have a pre-tax price and then an all-in price. Well, you really care about the all-in price, and it doesn't matter if you're getting a local occupancy tax or a local user tax, hotel motel tax. What matters is what you ultimately pay.
Yeah. That's it. And sometimes you'd be shocked if you looked at an itemization of that, of some of those hotels in some of the cities, for sure, as well.
But, well, one of the ones that struck me is I was on the West Coast, and I got a $50 a day golf bag handling fee. Well, I don't play golf, but it's just automatic. It's like, okay, we're to golf resort, so surely to goodness, we got to charge you a $50 a day golf bag handling fee.
Wow, I've never seen that. Interesting. So what do you think, what comes out of the annual meeting? I guess doubling down or tripling down on the notion that the tariffs are inflationary, and we're beginning to see more and more evidence of that, and therefore, you see, I'm kind of the mindset, I think they might end up doing nothing this year as it relates to rates.
Well, it's interesting. We actually have a little pool at work, and one of the people in our wealth management group is betting on zero and saying, you know what, they're just going to do nothing. I'm in the two rate cuts, 25 in September and then another 25 in December. But we're guessing like everybody else. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty. One of the things that has been tremendously helpful, though, is the U.S. economy remains fairly strong. So, you know, the consumer's still buying. We're beginning to see a bit of an uptick in manufacturing. Nothing like the president and the administration hoped for, but that's beginning to move in the right direction. And so if the economy is strong, if the consumer's buying, if these things trend up, then ironically, the very things that make the economy strong also would push for no decrease in rates. Because if things are going well, then you really don't need to decrease rates. There's not a reason to do it. Some of the reasons to decrease rates are labor uncertainty, people can't find work, you know, the economy is in a bit of a doldrum. And so sometimes keeping rates the same is not really a bad thing. It may be an indication that things are all right.
Now, what's interesting is there has been an increase in unit labor costs, which means wages are actually going up, right?
Yeah, wages continue to go up. The labor market is really a bit choppy right now. New graduates are struggling. I mean, it is tough for the new college graduates to find jobs. I think some of them ended up in with degrees and specialties that aren't in demand anymore. And we're beginning to see the long-anticipated effect of AI. What artificial intelligence is doing is some of the grunt work that college graduates used to do. Some of the big consulting firms like McKinsey and Bain are saying, you know, some of the data analysis work that we would formerly have hired college graduates to do, we're able to do with AI, so we can hire fewer college graduates as a result of that. So we're beginning to see that improvement in productivity. Now, it's good for the overall economy, not good if you're a recent finance graduate and suddenly you have fewer options. But that's something that's beginning to show up across the economy.
There's a lot of chatter, Guy, about the present immigration policy, the number of deportations, and tightening labor availability in the market. Are the indices showing that?
They are, and this is something that really concerns me. And I've had an opportunity to argue my case with our U.S. senators and with Representative Scalise, and my point to them is, almost everyone agrees that illegal open borders were a bad idea. you know, we need to have some control of our borders. We need to let people in that we've vetted. But I would say folks that have been here for years, that are paying taxes, that have jobs, kids are in school, I wouldn't round those folks up and throw them out. Certainly the criminals, but we're beginning to see, and we see this in our schools. We have a net tuition management group, and some of the schools with large Hispanic populations, the Spanish kids aren't showing up because they're afraid of raids. Well, I don't want to see children harmed in that way where they're missing an education. We're seeing our restaurants tell us it's very hard to fully staff restaurants right now. So I think we need to resolve immigration. And for the folks that came here, you know, if I were drawing the line, I'd say, okay, people that have been here for 5 years or longer, let's see if there's a way we can create a path to citizenship. Certainly maybe a fine, maybe make sure you're paying taxes and straightening up. But it is challenging to the labor pool in farming. It's challenging in the restaurant business. And that's also pushing inflation because those companies are having to pay more when they don't have a supply of immigrants available.
It seems to me that we could ultimately get to that place of compromise if the rhetoric was reduced on the Democrat side of the aisle relative to border security, their willingness in funding the technology that's necessary there, the wall, and things of that nature. There's, you know, the elimination of sanctuary cities, that whole approach, and kind of bring this more into our immigration policy actually matching up to what we need, you know, and have it as a more needs-based approach, which makes sense to me because all you're doing is you're aligning market demands, right?
Yeah, and there is just significant room for that. This is personal to me because my wife and I have petitioned to sponsor a professor from Havana to come to the U.S. So we've guaranteed his financial stability. We've guaranteed he's not going to be on welfare. Well, we couldn't get that approved during the Biden administration. And so far in the Trump administration, we haven't been able to get it approved either. So we hear both administrations say we want people to come in the right way, but we're not seeing that put into action. And I think part of it is both parties like having it as an issue. And it's tough to reach consensus when you think that you can fundraise on this issue, whether you're Team D or Team R. But there is room for a rational solution. And I think almost all Americans are looking for that because anyone who does their family tree realizes, look, if you're not a Native American, you came from somewhere else. So let's find a way to get the folks we need. Let's find a way to legalize people that are paying taxes, doing the right thing. And, you know, even if their parents made a mistake coming in illegally, you know, they came for a reason. So I think it's something that I really wish both sides would come together on and quit using as a fundraiser. We have shown that you can secure the border, so that's actually worked.
Yeah. It's really disappointing, right, that fundraising capabilities driving public policy. It just doesn't make and foreign policy probably as well. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we come back, we'll talk about some time sensitive issues. We'll also talk about Spirit Airlines, EV purchases, and labor mobility. So stay tuned. A lot of interesting topics coming your way. We'll be right back.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's a brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. And Guy, I know you wanted to talk about some time-sensitive issues that are out there.
Yeah, there are a couple that really matter. I'm going to start with one that most people might be affected by, which is air travel. Spirit Airlines made an unfortunate announcement, which is we don't have enough money to be sure that we can stay in business for a year. Well, that's a very difficult thing to say for Spirit, for their pilots, their employees, but it's really tough for New Orleans. And the reason is, of the airlines that serve New Orleans, Spirit's number four. The biggest in New Orleans by far is Southwest, followed by American and United. But Spirit is actually a couple of flights above Delta. So we have 20 different locations that we have nonstop flights on Spirit. And one of them, San Pedro Sula, Spirit's the only airline that flies nonstop. So if you want to go there, and we have a big Honduran community here, you want to get to San Pedro Sula, we need Spirit. The challenge is, if you buy a ticket on Spirit and they go bankrupt 6 months from now, you could potentially lose your money. But the time-sensitive thing is, if you use your credit card and you buy your ticket within 90 days of the flight, you can charge it back if there's a problem. Also, some travel insurance policies cover airline bankruptcy. So the point is not to quit using Spirit. It's actually important for the city of New Orleans. We need those 20 flights because it provides competition, gives us options going to different places. But for consumers, I don't want to see any of our listeners end up with a ticket that's worthless. So either make sure your travel insurance covers that or buy your ticket 90 days or less from your date of departure. Because it is important for us to have a competitive airport, to have options, to have Spirit stay in business.
Guy, what is contributing to this instability of the airline industry? It always seems like it's on the brink of bad things all the time.
It is interesting. Somebody asked Warren Buffett, he said, well, what do you think about the airline business for investors? He said, in the whole history of commercial aviation, the airline business has been negative for investors. It would have been better for the stock investors if somebody had shot Orville and Wilville down when they flew their airplane at Kitty Hawk. Which I thought that was pretty dramatic.
Yeah, I would say so.
But his point is, the airline business is exciting. It's one of those thrilling businesses. Lots of people like to go into it. The airline manufacturers love to sell planes. So if you start a new airline, they'll sell you planes, give you favorable financing. And for years, it was a very regulated business until Jimmy Carter deregulated the airlines. The airlines competed on food quality, not on price. Once they started competing on price, all the major airlines went broke. Delta, United, and American all filed for bankruptcy because they had entrenched costs they couldn't live with. Spirit started out, like Frontier, as an ultra-low cost carrier. And what happened to Spirit is COVID obviously was devastating. That killed air travel. But Spirit also declared bankruptcy, which, once again, not unusual. It's what Warren Buffett didn't like about the industry. But in Spirit's bankruptcy, they didn't reduce cost. All they did was exchange some bonds for stock. And so they ended up in a situation where they've gone through the pain of bankruptcy, but they didn't get the benefit. Spirit also made some really bad merger decisions. They were talking about a merger with Frontier, which made sense because those are both ultra-low-cost carriers. JetBlue came in and offered more money, and so Spirit dumped the Frontier merger idea, went with JetBlue, which later on blew up. So now, after spending a year plus focused only on the JetBlue merger, they're stuck, and that merger is not going to happen. So logically, what Frontier needs to do is go back to Frontier hat in hand and say, look, just give us the best deal you can, because we don't want to close the airline. We don't want to see all the employees go broke. But it was bad management decision making, bad decision on the bankruptcy to not solve their cost problem when they had a chance. And then their merger dynamics, walking away from Frontier, walking into JetBlue, and then being jilted by JetBlue, really created a problem for Spirit. So they're stuck in a terrible position. I do feel, though, on behalf of New Orleans, that we want to have Spirit around, because it does help when you have big events. It's a lot of flights in and out of New Orleans. And they had been expanding before they ran into their problems. So,
And they go to places that a lot of these major airlines won't go to, right? And there are cities that are just incredibly difficult to get to without an airline like, you know, Spirit or Frontier or even JetBlue.
Yeah, because, I mean, cities like Raleigh-Durham, okay, you know, everyone goes to Atlanta and Dallas, but not that many people go to Charlotte, Raleigh-Durham, Nashville, Baltimore. You know, those are Fort Lauderdale. Those are all places that Spirit serves. You know, Cancun for the vacationers. You know, if you want a really discount flight, you can go to Cancun for very little money on Spirit. So I encourage people, you know, support the airline, but buy your tickets 90 days or less using a credit card so that they have enough volume that hopefully they can continue. And then also, if you do want to do a longer one, look at the travel insurance and make sure the policy covers bankruptcy, because it is important. Now, you have to realize Spirit is an ultra-low carrier, and there was a joke in one of the aviation publications. The pilot came on and said, "Folks, we're approaching a thunderstorm. We can go around, but that'll cost extra fuel. So if you want to avoid the turbulence and rain and discomfort, get out your credit card. Otherwise, we're going to have to go straight through."
Now, there's also some time-sensitive issues relative to electric vehicle purchases.
Yeah. September 30th is the absolute deadline. With the Big Beautiful Bill, it ended the extended EV tax credits. So a brand new EV, if you make less than $300,000 a year as a couple, you get $7,500 off. And what's more important, a used EV, you get $4,000 off. And really encourage people to take a look. Some of the EVs are actually really interesting and great vehicles, not as a primary car, but as a second car. You know, if you have, you know, one car that you use for trips and evacuations, but a second car that you really just use for going to work and around town, the prices are down. And because of Tesla's connection with Elon Musk, people are selling used Teslas at a discount. So you're getting a pretty outstanding vehicle at a discount. And you can get an additional $4,000 off because of the EV deadline. But, I mean, it is not going to be extended. This is one of those things I'm very certain about. I see zero chance of a Republican Congress saying, yeah, you know, we're going to extend these EV mandates. So September 30th is the absolute deadline. And it's worth taking a look. I just encourage people, if you're looking at a second car, that's something that's worth considering.
If you're above the income ceiling that you just talked about, I didn't realize that there was that. Does the credit decline or it just simply goes away?
It goes away. So if you're above the ceiling, just you can afford to buy your EV. At least that's the thought of Congress.
Right. So that doesn't matter. All right, we got to get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we come back, we'll talk about labor mobility slowing and how that, but it also complicates attempts to tax the wealthy. When we return,
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. And Guy, let's talk about labor mobility.
Yeah, this is an interesting topic. I think most of us remember growing up, it wasn't unusual to have families move into the neighborhood and you'd meet the kids and you'd discover that every 3 years they moved. You know, it was just part of the pattern. The dad would get a new job and they would move and they knew they were going to be here for a while. And then they'd be on their way. That trend is slowing and has been slowing for the last 30 years. What's happened is with two-income households, it's more challenging to move because you have to have a job for both spouses. So there's a real reluctance on the two-income households to move. And to the extent that people are born in a community, they're less likely to move to a new community. If you've moved once, you're more likely to move twice. So we're seeing a decrease in mobility as people are born in that area. New Orleans was always an outlier. It was famous for if the woman was from New Orleans and somebody got married, the HR professionals knew eventually she would find a way to get back to New Orleans. So you have a decrease, and that's certainly hurting the U.S. in terms of global competitiveness, because one of our advantages used to be that we would easily move. And, you know, if there were more jobs in Chicago and fewer jobs in Baltimore, people would move to Chicago or vice versa. Now that's slowing down. But underneath that trend is companies are still relocating. We're still seeing a migration of companies from the West and the Midwest to the South and from the Northeast to the South. So as companies move, you'll also see senior management move, and then they'll hire new people from that local area. So we're seeing this challenge, and of course, it's what you would expect, too. Younger people are more likely to move than older. But some of the states that are looking to tax residents, they're primarily blue states facing deficits, say, well, we're going to tax the millionaires, we're going to tax the billionaires because they're not going to move. What they're discovering is you can do that for a while. And the people that have studied mobility have found if someone with high income or high net worth has kids in school, they are very unlikely to move. If they have a business that was established in that city, they're very unlikely to move. But what they're also seeing is when those folks with resources retire, they're very likely to consider moving to places without estate taxes. So if you have a substantial estate tax, that can be a real negative to keeping very rich people in town. And whether you like or dislike rich people, they're great for the tax base. You know, they pay a lot of taxes. They don't use public services. They're not using the schools. They're not a burden to society, and they hire a lot of folks. So if you drive those people away, it really can make a big difference. When David Koch moved from New York, he actually cost New York several billion in tax, in estate tax, when he passed away. So some of these blue states are trying to increase taxes, and they're saying, well, labor's not very mobile. We can get away with it. But it turns out it's a little more mobile than you think at critical times, particularly once the kids are out of school.
You know, it's going to be interesting in light of what's going on in New York City with the mayor's race there. I think you probably read this article in the Wall Street Journal this morning about J.P. Morgan Chase, their new $3 billion tower that they built, 2.5 million square feet of office space that Jamie Dimon has talked about moving people back to the office. It's going to be interesting to see how that's ultimately going to play out and whether or not there's going to be a loss. I think a lot of people have been holding off on a decision as to whether or not they stay employed there or they move somewhere else. that's more amenable to a hybrid model than not. Your thoughts?
Well, and you know, Jamie Dimon is pretty outspoken about, look, you need to show up at the office. But he also had a big bus tour where he was looking around in the Southeast and saying, you know, we want to open hundreds of new branches in the Southeast. So some of the folks at J.P. Morgan that are being called to Midtown Manhattan may say, you know what, Jamie, we love the company, and we want to help you with that expansion in Charlotte and that expansion in Atlanta and that expansion in Dallas. So you can have this building. You can say you have to work full time. But when you have a big company with lots of locations, they may choose to go somewhere else. And you're going to need to hire people to staff all those spots. So I think that is going to be a challenge. And I think maybe if he had a second chance to do it, he might reconsider, particularly if Mondami gets elected, having all those eggs in that New York City basket. The real interesting thing, Newell, is to see where Jamie retires, because the estate tax in New York is substantial. It may well be that he decides that his vacation home in another city becomes his permanent residence once he's no longer actively working. But that's a question for another day, and I certainly have no personal insight, but a lot of people do that when they retire.
Well, it's just a common sense approach to estate planning, right? I mean, why give it away?
Yeah.
You don't have to.
And that's the thing
that drives me crazy about people are saying, you know, what Mondani's talking about. Oh, it's not going to have any impact. Really? That's contrary to the best interest of the individual. If they're flexible and they'll leave.
Yeah, I had a business owner really bring that home to me. She said, look, I'm selling my business next year, and my condo in Florida is going to be free. I said, what are you talking about? She said, I'm going to buy a condo in Florida. I'm going to establish residence there, and I'm going to save enough on taxes that I will, when I move back to New Orleans in 2 years, I will have effectively gotten that condo for free. So I'll have a vacation home at no cost. And I thought, son of a gun. I had never thought of it that way, but yeah. People make decisions rationally based on what's best for them.
So how long did it take you to go home and do that pro forma?
Newell, I asked our CFO one day, I said, can I be a Florida resident and have no state income tax? He told me no. I said, no tax, buddy. You make your living in New Orleans, so pay your taxes.
Right.
So I'm going to hang here and pay my taxes.
No can do for you. Guy Williams, as always, we truly enjoy the conversation and appreciate you joining us. Have a great week.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be with you.
Thank you, sir. Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot. Stay with us. Scoot's headed your way. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
We'll talk about the mayor, the Saints, Zelensky, President Trump, and a whole bunch of other stuff.
All righty. Stay tuned. Have a great evening.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.